Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The American Medical Association now classifies obesity as a disease. No longer is it considered a condition or a risk factor. That means it will be looked at a lot differently by doctors, patients, insurance companies, and perhaps the population in general. One thing it does is immediately classify one-third of the American population as ill. That in itself is testimony to the fact that obesity is a major issue in this country and reinforces the fact that people who are obese are at greater risk for major health problems. With us to talk about obesity as a problem and as a disease, Professor Amy Moore, Assistant Professor of Nutrition and Dietetics at St. Louis University. We expect to be joined in just a couple of moments by Dr. Michael Lim, Slucare Cardiologist and Director of the Division of Cardiology at St. Louis University. But we'll start with Amy. Thanks so much for being with us, Amy. Nice to see you again.
Yes.
Do you agree with the new classification that obesity should be classified as a disease?
It helps draw attention to the serious medical effects of obesity. So I think it's good for with childhood obesity so that parents and schools and the community realize how severe obesity is and people may pay more attention to it and take more preventative action.
Well, I wonder beyond that what the impact is likely to be. Do you have any sense of what could happen?
There could be more cost, and depending with hopefully what we're hopeful for is that we can have more preventative reimbursement for care. So like registered dietitians and doctors will get reimbursed for providing medical attention. And when in that physician encounter, they can talk about obesity as a disease, they can classify it, and they can provide nutrition counseling and therapy for the obesity.
As I understand it, however, the AMA classification carries no legal weight. It's simply one organization's perception of the problem.
Yes, but again, it does, because of all the comorbidities of obesity, which is the increased high blood pressure, the diabetes, if we can, you know, calling it a disease does highlight it more so that we can get the reimbursement and get people the treatment that they need.
Yeah, I'll put this question to you, although when Dr. Lim comes, I'll put it to him as well. There are no specific symptoms for obesity. Right. I mean, I think we can agree on that. We know it when we see it, needless to say. It's more of a risk factor for diseases such as coronary and diabetes, just as you've suggested, but no symptoms. So therefore, should it be called a disease?
Well, there are ways to classify obesity, and that we currently use BMI. So when your BMI is above the 30, when your BMI gets into 30.
That's body mass index, by the way.
Yes, body mass index. So that's how you would be classified as obese. So that stays the same. And then there's always been what we call the comorbidities and mortalities of obesity. So we know that as your BMI increases, your risk for those other diseases also increases.
As we get started in our conversation, I'm going to open up the lines earlier, make people available to talk to us and ask whether they consider obesity a disease. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. We will take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on air. Let's get to the area in which you have the greatest amount of expertise, and that is, of course, in the area of nutrition and dietetics. How is this likely to change your field?
Well, hopefully, again, we can get reimbursed for preventative care. So we can talk about obesity as a disease, and we can get reimbursed for doing the intensive behavioral counseling. It's been shown that people who are able to receive counseling on weight loss are able to achieve that weight loss and stick with it. And now they'll be able to come to a dietitian and get that counseling. So more than, you know, a quick 15-minute session. But actually come and get the counseling that's needed to help with weight loss.
When you talk about reimbursement, who's doing the reimbursing in these cases?
Well, it's the Medicare and Medicaid because now that it is a disease and being able to bill for it.
Medicare, though, has in the past always paid for that, or certainly in the last decade or so.
Well, now that it's classified as a disease, it can be the reimburse for it.
I would thought Medicare had accepted it as a disease.
Well, I'm strictly speaking from the dietitian standpoint. But really what it allows is for people to come in and get the counseling. Obesity isn't, there's not a fix for it. It's not an easy cure. It takes, you know, the community, the schools, homes, parents. It takes a lot of effort to try to get someone at a healthy weight and to stay at that healthy weight. So that's what is good, that we can actually talk to people for an extended length of time and really handle all those things that surround obesity.
What about the insurance industry as a whole? I wonder how it will respond to this. Will they handle reimbursements as well, I wonder?
It'll be interesting, and there's different bills out there right now trying to, because it's fairly new, and seeing what the reimbursement is going to look like.
Yeah. Well, it's never quite sure exactly what that industry is going to do. And again, looking ahead to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as some people are calling that, I wonder how that's likely to be impacted by this.
It's all very interesting. And, you know, as a nation, there's a lot going on with obesity, with Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative, with the mayor here in St. Louis trying to reduce obesity in the city of St. Louis. So there's a lot of effort nationwide going on to help prevent and treat obesity.
Let me go back to the BMI, the body mass index again. A lot of people, that is the yardstick by which obesity is measured.
Currently,
but a
yes.
lot of people think that is a flawed process. What do you think?
Currently, it's what is accepted as how we classify both childhood overweight and adults. And childhood, we use the BMI for the growth charts. There are other standards being looked at, the waist measurements, but currently they do use the BMI.
How does the BMI work? How is that calculated?
It takes into account your height and your weight, and then with that number. And for instance, with childhood, not too many years ago, we didn't call children obese. We said children were overweight because obesity was considered negative terms. But then they really highlighted that it is serious. And so now children are referred to as obese because of the serious action that's needed to be taken to help prevent that extra weight gain.
Isn't it possible to be considered obese if you're, say, just 30 pounds overweight if the BMI numbers don't line up properly?
They are, and that's a reassuring thing, too, that with only 10% of weight loss, you can reduce your risk of diabetes and your cholesterol and the side effects. So it can be easy to become overweight in our country, but you don't need a ton of weight loss to get healthier.
Let's talk about losing that weight from the nutritionist's point of view. Is it simply a question of just eating less, fewer calories?
Not so much. That seems too simple, and I think if that was, we wouldn't have one-third of our nation overweight, and we wouldn't have 17% of our children overweight. Mm. There's genetics into play, but there's also the home environment, the school environment, and the community. It's been said that a person trying to be healthy is weak, a family trying to be healthy is stronger, and a community trying to be healthier is really your pillar for being healthy.
And exercise obviously plays a huge role in all of this.
Definitely. And the calorie balance is not as easy as it used to, you know, just say eat less and exercise more, because as Americans are eating out more, for example, they might drive through McDonald's on the way to the Pee Wee soccer game, and it's hard to burn. You don't burn off that many calories in your soccer game. So we're having more calories in than we're able to expend in physical activity.
Okay. Well, I understand that Dr. Lim is joining us by phone now. Thank you for getting us started on this. Doctor, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you so much for being so. I'm going to cover some of the ground I already have with Amy just to get the medical perspective on this. And let me begin by asking you if you agree with this reclassification by the AMA, making obesity now classified as a disease.
Well, I'm not sure that there's a concept of agreeing or disagreeing with it. What I would say is that the statement that the AMA is making, I agree with. So I believe the intent of making obesity a disease is to try to shed light upon the importance that having a healthy weight versus an unhealthy overweight has in the health of every individual person in the country.
Aside from that, making people more aware, what would you think the impact is likely to be on your profession?
Well, the impact of overweight people on our profession is that we're a lot busier, and the things that we're asked to try to help people with are a lot more complex. And so when people are overweight, they have higher blood pressures, they have or they do develop diabetes, and these two things, and it goes along with physical activity, so those three things really make the progression of a disease complex called coronary artery disease pretty rampant. And so blockages form within the arteries that supply blood to the heart. These people are at much higher risk for having heart attacks. These people have a significant decline in their overall cardiovascular health, and the challenge for us to be able to fix it or overcome these obstacles is much harder.
You know, one of the things that I've been reading about in preparation for this program is some of the critics of this move by the AMA suggest that, you know, doctors have never spent a whole lot of time talking about this with patients who are overweight, other than to say, you've got to lose weight. I assume that's going to change.
That absolutely has to change, but I would suggest that I would even take one step down. So we can critique with respect to whether the doctor's advice about, well, you got to lose weight is, how important that is, or that seems to be too simplistic. But I would suggest that there's a lot of patient-doctor interactions that don't even address somebody's weight. And it's similar to smoking, and studies have shown that if a patient comes into a physician's office who smokes, and it's never even brought up that the patient smokes, not that the doctor has to chastise the patient for smoking or tell them to quit smoking, but at least just bring it up and saying, I am not really endorsing the concept that you smoke. I know you do. I know you're trying to quit. We have talked about it before. But at least that acknowledgement is much different than the lack of acknowledgement. And when we don't acknowledge the fact that somebody smokes, and we don't acknowledge the fact that somebody has an unhealthy weight, that's sort of a passive approval of that. Because patients are just like you and I are, and we're looking for whatever we do to sort of be approved. And that's sort of not the message we want to be sending.
The AMA decision carries no legal authority with it, as I understand. So what does that mean?
Well, the AMA is a physician body, and they're an organization that tries to encourage physicians in healthcare to perform in a particular matter. And so their recommendations are really not binding in any way, shape, or form. But they, in doing this, have raised awareness, and I think that's their sole purpose of what they're trying to get at from this change of increasing obesity into something we need to be paying more attention to.
One other question before I have to take a break. Some people have suggested this is just a question of semantics, that there really is no standard definition even for the word disease.
Well, that's true. That is a question of semantics, but let me rephrase the question. So, the society is kind of into a pass-fail kind of concept, or am I on the good side of the line or the bad side of the line? And I would suggest that there's an awful lot of people who are on the wrong side of the line with respect to their weight, and it's unhealthy. And I think the concept of this question is not trying to debate who's sort of on that line or who is classified as obese but really isn't. But the question really is, in the majority of folks, are we addressing everything we can to improve somebody's overall health and really pay attention to the thing that we always subscribe to, and that's prevention. Can we prevent that heart attack? Can we prolong somebody's life? And I think we can do that if we address obesity better. I don't think we do ourselves a service if we try to play along in the lines of, well, who's potentially going to be misclassified in a small range of people.
And that's Dr. Michael Lim, a slew care cardiologist and director of the Division of Cardiology at St. Louis University. He joins us by phone. With me in studio is Professor Amy Moore, assistant professor of nutrition and dietetics at St. Louis University. We're talking about the recent classification of obesity as a disease by the American Medical Association. We'll come back and continue that conversation, and we'd very much like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? Do you consider obesity a disease? Let us know at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, and we will be happy to accept a tweet at STL On Air. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on obesity in general. And basically this is framed because of what the American Medical Association did a few weeks ago when it declared that obesity now should be considered a disease. My guests, Dr. Michael Lim, Slough Care cardiologist, and Amy Moore, professor, assistant professor of nutrition and dietetics at St. Louis University. I'll ask this question of both of you, and Amy, I'll start with you because we haven't heard from you in a couple of minutes. As I said in the introduction, obesity declaration makes one-third of the American population officially branded as ill. Is that fair?
I think it's fair, and now it can be talked about in their doctor's office, and they can receive the counseling that they need, and it takes more than just one mention. You know, it's hard to lose weight. It takes a lot of effort to lose weight. So I think it is fair that now they can be talked about it, and it's not ignored in the doctor's office.
Dr. Lim?
So there's two ways to look at that. So we can look at our current population, and you said let's take your figures to be correct, and then it'd be a third of the people are now labeled as having a disease. You know, if we look at it from that standpoint, I would suggest that a big percentage of that one-third of our population can impact that disease and potentially be quote-unquote cured from that disease. That would be a good thing. But then on the other side of the spectrum, if we can prevent a huge number of people from ever becoming obese, so if we can impact our young people and our kids so that they don't ever develop it, that's going to have substantial impact on the health of the people in this country.
Well, we can certainly hope so, because there's no question it's a problem, no matter how you look at it. How do you look at the BMI, mass body index, BMI. You know, a lot of people think that's a flawed, and Amy and I had talked about that, a flawed way of measuring this problem. How do you see it?
Again, I guess I sort of alluded to this in an earlier answer. You know, we can nitty pick about the people who might be labeled as obese based on a BMI that's over a number, but there's a large percentage of people who that doesn't qualify for. So they are obese. Their number's over, and their body habit suggests that they're carrying too much weight. And that's where we should devote our attention to. So we don't have a perfect measuring scale, but if we take it in context of the entire person, I think we're doing pretty good from a standpoint of who is obese and unhealthy and who is not.
I wonder how the insurance industry is looking at this. Do you have any indication from any of your contacts or readings that since this happened? It would seem to me that this would be a problem for the insurance industry.
Well, so this is the next question, is that all diseases should potentially be covered with respect to their treatment from a medical insurance standpoint, and is the insurance company going to do that? I don't have any inside information to that, and I don't think that the AMA was necessarily making a statement with respect to insurance needs to start covering gym memberships and that type of thing. But I do think that we continue to talk about the fact that primary prevention or prevention of diseases is actually where we realize cost savings in our health system. And if people never have the disease, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than trying to treat them after they get it. And targeting obesity in people who are overweight has a great chance of decreasing the number of people with disease. And so it's actually going to be cost beneficial in the long run if we're successful at this.
We have an email from Sheila in University City who writes, I would agree that obesity is a disease. Would you describe some aspect of that disease as an addiction? Are there addictions to various food substances, sugar, wheat, et cetera? Let me start with Amy on that one.
There was an article that I just read that suggests that of the obese people, maybe 10% could actually be categorized as a true food addiction. I think it depends on, is it an addiction or is it a habit or is it what's available to you? I think all that comes into play with what people choose to eat.
That is particularly noticeable, I think, in poorer communities where overweight is a more significant problem, it seems to me, as an observer, than it is in others.
Yeah, we have looked at food deserts, and those are areas where there's not a large supermarket or place to buy fresh produce, and obesity rates are higher in those areas.
Doctor, do you see that that addiction issue?
I think society is addicted to eating.
Well, it is necessary.
This is normal. So all of us sort of would think about what would be a great evening, and usually it's surrounding a meal. And the problem with that is that oftentimes the overall size of the meal is way larger than we should be eating. Is that a true addiction? I'm not sure, but this is a societal standard that I think needs to change.
I wonder if we need public policies to incentivize healthy diets and exercise and those things that are really good for us that so many of us don't do.
I think there's a saying that health in all policies, so looking at everything from complete streets, so do our streets, are they designed for people to walk and ride their bikes? School policies, what's the policy on school lunches? A lot of those have changed. So I think policy does have an impact on our food system.
Doctor?
Yeah, I would agree with what Amy just said, but I would say that it really needs to be more of a grassroots standpoint. So the things that have come down from a public policy standpoint with respect to mandates have been met with more resistance, and they haven't really helped. And so in New York City, where they banned the size of a sugary soft drink that you could obtain from a fast food place, this has the same kind of idea behind it in trying to limit the amount of overall sugar and calories that people are consuming. But I don't think this is something that we can mandate. I think that people need to start rising up and creating healthier atmospheres for themselves.
I agree. And with the sugary beverage, it all kind of comes down to education. So do people understand why you shouldn't drink so many ounces of sugar-sweetened beverages and how that's affecting your health? So, and it doesn't prevent them from going out and buying two of the smaller sizes. So a lot of it is the education in what's available.
These sugared soft drinks are really incredibly bad for us, aren't they?
Well, they do have the extra calories, so they're not high in nutrition. You know, you're just getting the extra calories, and many schools are taking them out. But there's other beverages besides soda. So many people just look at sodas. If you look at juices, American children drink way more juice than is recommended or that they need. The energy drinks are full of extra calories. So really, it's seeing what the calories in water and low-fat dairy such as milk are really the best options.
Let's bring Marty into the conversation, calling from South City. I think he has some input on this particular part of the conversation. Marty, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi. I had actually initially called in about the BMI issue, yeah. And something that has it seems to be a little bit misunderstood. I understand BMI as like the crudest of mathematical calculations. It's simply just, you know, weight and height, and there you go. And I it seems like that is soft science would be a silly way to put, a silly way to put it, I think. But there are a lot of people who would fall into, who would not qualify as obese, who still have significant weight problems, and people who could still be, you know, at least moderately healthy, who would still qualify as obese. So that's kind of what I wanted to address, is that still seems to be a problem.
All right. We have talked a little bit about that. Doctor, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, so I would agree with this concept, and that is that, you know, as a physician, we're trained to take the entire person into context. And so I would suggest that what we don't do is we don't ultimately focus on a number like the BMI, but we look at the entire picture. And so the other things we look at is where's the proportion of weight? And so we look at something called a waist circumference, which is not your belt size. It's actually the diameter around your body right at the tops of your hips. And people who have a bigger waist circumference, that's unhealthy weight. So they might have an overall normal weight, but it's just distributed wrong. And that leads itself to some health problems. The other thing we look at and we should pay more attention to than we currently do is overall amount of physical activity. And so we could be blessed with a relatively non-obese BMI, but we don't do anything to keep it there. And so this is a patient or a person that potentially is going to become obese or still isn't as healthy as they could be because they could be more active and helping themselves better. And so it's a big picture standpoint rather than focusing on an individual number that I would continue to stress.
Well, that's great to hear. I think the last thing I'd like to just add is that in casual conversations with people that I just talk to about, you know, more often than not, it's about food and nutrition. But in the general population, in my experience, BMI and obesity is not seen as well. Is not seen as a piece of things. It's seen as the bottom line. And I suppose that's it. And thank you very much for your time.
Marty, thank you so much for the call. Doctor and Amy, one of the things that I have heard is that a particular problem is belly fat, that fat that accumulates in your belly, which happens to a lot of folks, really is very, very dangerous for the organs that are inside that part of the body. Can you address that, doctor? Is that overstated?
It's not overstated, and there actually is a syndrome, so it's a little bit different than a disease, but a syndrome is a collection of different things that is associated with a markedly worse outcome for that person. That's called metabolic syndrome, and one of the components to metabolic syndrome is having a larger waist circumference, as I was alluding to before. This is associated with people also having higher blood pressures, having higher overall circulating blood sugar levels in their blood, but not necessarily being diabetic, and having a bad cholesterol panel, but not necessarily needing treatment. So the cholesterol panel and the high blood pressure and the higher sugars don't necessarily meet disease categorization, but the collection of all of those things gets pulled into this concept of metabolic syndrome. And these people develop cardiovascular disease earlier in age, and they have worse outcomes from it. So that speaks to that belly fat issue that you're asking about.
And you're nodding in affirmation, Amy. Anything to add?
No, I mean, that's how we just saw, that's where a lot of your internal organs are.
Exactly.
So as that fat accumulates, all those conditions that he just mentioned occur.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the phones, and we'll bring in Deborah calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Deborah.
Yeah, hi. Recently, I had to find a new diet because I lost about 45 pounds, and my hypoglycemia kicked in again, so I needed to get back on a diet. And I got 4 books from the library, well, 5 actually. One described hypoglycemia, and the others were weight loss books. And one of them described being overweight as being addicted to fructose, which is a form of sugar. And all of the books give a specific diet. Four different where you start and, you know, go on. And then when you're finished, you have lost a whole bunch of weight and you're under control. You're just eating the certain foods and you're okay. Also, there's Weight Watchers and there's Overeaters Anonymous. And would you like the names of these books?
Sure, if you can do it very, very quickly.
Yeah, one is Dr. Atkins' New Diet Cookbook, The Sugar Fix by Timothy Gower, Feed Muscle, Shrink Fat Diet by Kathy Smith, and Dr. Grundick's Diet Evolution. And they're very helpful.
Deborah, thank you so much for the call. Let's get some response. I'm particularly interested in the fructose, Amy.
Well, and that's, again, why it's important to have counseling for overweight and obesity. It's because not one diet works for everyone. And we actually like to say a diet should be the way you're going to eat for the rest of your life, which is really eating healthy and exercising. What works for one person may not work for another. They need help planning a meal. Maybe they need help picking healthier items if they eat out. So that's really where that counseling comes in, to teach people how to eat right.
You know, I think I heard once that books on diet and dieting, probably more books written on that than anything else. And a lot of them are contradictory. What are your thoughts about people who turn to the books?
I think it's not easy, or we wouldn't have this obesity problem in America. It's not easy with our current structure of our communities and our restaurants and our food system to eat right. So there's a coin called making the healthy choice the easy choice. And sometimes that takes the whole community, starting sometimes at the preschool level. But it's not easy just to follow a diet for everyone. And if you look at a lot of, it's that yo-yo dieting. They'll lose a lot of weight, and then as soon as you come off of it, you might gain the weight. So it's really what's going to work for you to be able to eat healthy each and every day.
Want to weigh in on that, Doctor?
Yeah, so I love what Amy just said, and I want to expound on two things because I think they're exceptionally important. Number one is, I think society uses the term diet, or thinks about the term diet, as a temporary condition and not a permanent condition. Permanently, we should have a diet, and that diet is the one that leads us to a better state of health, not one that tries to quickly establish a different weight or body image or a dress or a suit or that type of thing. And the problem is that society thinks upon diet in a temporary condition. So we need to find something that we can stick with and that we're going to be doing for a long time. And the second thing that she brought up that I wanted to reemphasize, because I think it's highly important, is that diet is something that is highly individual, because we all bring forward different aspects to what our conditions are, pre-existing conditions are, to what is important in our diet. And it's very hard because, again, this gets back to some of the social mandates or political mandates that have come out. Something that is low sodium isn't necessarily low in calories, and something that is low in fat is not necessarily low in calories. But all of these, when we go to our regular store, are looked upon as healthier choices than the regular. And so what is the right makeup of, do I buy low sodium foods, do I buy low fat foods, or do I pay attention to overall calories? Or it's just too confusing for me. And so this is why a lot more education needs to take place, and we need to be paying more attention to what we can do to be on a diet that we can sustain.
It seems that all food products are advertising themselves today as being healthier and less fattening, and you know, all of the positives, and we have no real way of knowing if in fact that's true. Amy, I'm sure there's something you're concerned with.
Yes, and it's always, if you go back and you stick to fruits and vegetables and whole grains and lean meats and kind of stay out of that processed food aisle, there's not all those labels that you have to deal with. And a lot of it does go back to cooking. Cooking is becoming a lost art. So if your shopping consists of processed food and frozen dinners, and a lot of them, it's just that marketing. There's a lot of marketing towards kids that show that they, you know, choose the unhealthy options because of the way it's advertised. And that's true for adults, too. So some things that are being looked at is nutrition education in the grocery store, because that determines what's in your home to eat.
We have media literacy in the world of journalism. We ought to have some sort of literacy campaign when it comes to reading the labels on our food. I have to take another break. We'll come back and continue our conversation. Take more phone calls. Folks who are waiting, be patient. We'll get to you as soon as we come back. My guest in studio, you just heard from Professor Amy Moore, Assistant Professor of Nutrition and Dietetics at St. Louis University. Joining us by phone is Dr. Michael Lim, Sluker Cardiologist and Director of the Division of Cardiology at St. Louis University. Back with more in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. And before we continue our conversation on obesity and the fact that the American Medical Association has now classified obesity as a disease, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The school transfer process for students from Normandy and Riverview Gardens is expected to be completed today, and Riverview has decided not to provide transportation to a third district. Organizing for Action volunteers are holding two community events to convince Representatives Ann Wagner and Blaine Lutkemeyer that it's time to act on comprehensive immigration reform. And Illinois Governor Quinn is signing bills today to make Illinois roads safer. These stories and more this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day on stlpublicradio.org. Now back to that conversation. I promise to go right to the phones. Let's do so. We'll bring up Art first, calling from South St. Louis. Go ahead, Art.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, Don. You know, I think you have to really get back to the basics of the Creator. No two individuals are alike. You got to look at the pituitary, which goes ahead and evaluates, is the individual an ectomorph or a mesomorph? You got to look at the bone sizes, wrist, ankle, waist to hips. And then you have to go ahead and look at the thyroid. Is the thyroid, which plays a big part with respect to abdominal weight, and that gives your waist to your hip measurements. And then finally, I guess what I'm thinking with respect to sugars, sucrose, glucose, levulose, different degrees of calories, and the natural part of it. The entire BMI is, I think, sort of obscure when it just takes into account, and maybe I don't quite get that, whether or not it's a specific gravity type of a test, a water test, but I don't see the implication of why that's an overall good measurement. Age and height also plays a role.
Thank you, Art, for the call. Doctor, do you want to address some of the issues that he raised there?
Yeah, I think Art is basically hitting on some of the things that I've already stressed, and that is, of course, we look at everybody as an individual, and so there's no absolute one measure which is any more important than others. He's also bringing about a concept that the engine isn't necessarily running efficiently if you have some disorders, and so thyroid conditions can certainly have us have a different weight than we would have if the thyroid was functioning normally. And so, nothing is looked at in isolation. And again, I stressed this before, but this isn't a pass-fail condition. So hopefully you and your doctor are looking at yourselves as an overall person and not an individual number.
You know, one of the phrases that I hear a lot in connection with diet is insulin resistance. What exactly is that, and what does it do or not do?
Yeah, so insulin is secreted by the pancreas, and it's a hormone that actually causes the body to be able to take up sugar or glucose and start using it as fuel, and so as insulin becomes resistant, so it's not as effective, we have more circulating blood glucose or higher sugar levels. Insulin resistance is sometimes labeled as pre-diabetic. When diabetic people most of the time have type 2 diabetes, which is the ultimate form of insulin resistance. So we have a lot of circulating insulin, and it's just not working very efficiently. So you're either diabetic or you have insulin resistance or you have normal insulin sensitivity is a different way to look at it.
Amy, what can we do with our diet to keep us on the right track with regard to this?
Well, one is knowing. We're talking a lot about numbers, and I think a lot of people know how much they weigh and maybe obsessed with that. But what is your fasting blood glucose level? What is your cholesterol level? I think if we be concerned with our health numbers mm-hmm. as much as we are with that, whatever that body weight is that we desire to be, that can help us. And definitely getting screened to make sure you're not getting to that pre-diabetic and turning into that diabetic.
Good. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Dennis, who's been waiting a good long while. Thanks for being with us, Dennis. Go ahead.
Yeah, Don. About 10 years ago, I remember I heard about a study where they were looking in diabetes. They were basically using college students and messing with their sleep patterns, and they noticed after depriving sleep, they start to see some of the problems with diabetes in no time at all. And I was in the printing industry and I'm watching nurses right now, and I, you know, they have odd hours. They work different hours, and I think a lot of people are working two jobs, and it's not always just the fact that they're the wrong things are being eaten. It's sleep patterns are really, really hard on people, and they gain weight because they're not getting sleep the way they should. And then they maybe they eat wrong, but they're like I said, I think it's the nurses are a lot heavier now, and maybe they need to be because they're picking up so many big patients. So okay. I'd like to hear the comments.
Dennis, thank you. I'll start with Amy. Is our biological clock a factor in all of this?
There is a lot of research on sleep and weight, and that you need the 8 hours of sleep, and anything under that can make you crave sweets and leads to a more unhealthy diet, which leads to weight gain.
Doctor, thoughts?
Well, so I'm a little bit conflicted in this statement because I sort of live the statement the caller brings up, and not necessarily getting all the sleep that Amy recommends that I get, which in some ways I wish I could. But the body needs certain things, and so the body does need its rest. And so it rest most of the time should occur at night, but if it can't occur at night, it still needs kind of a dedicated time where it can get it. The body also needs its time of exercise or activity. So these are the things that get broken apart. And what I would suggest is that what the caller is bringing up is not necessarily the fact that we have a bunch of people on a night shift, but the fact that we don't pay attention to doing the right things on a daily basis. We don't incorporate exercise and activity during the day. And if we did that more, maybe our sleep would be better, and our body would be able to utilize the fuel that it's given in terms of its diet more efficiently and not be thrown off a program. And so when we're sleep deprived, the body gets into an emergency state where it tries to say, hey, I might need to store more calories away. And so it changes the metabolism around a little bit to store more fat. And that's kind of the opposite of what we're trying to do.
You know, I have an acquaintance who runs a fairly successful, quite successful weight loss program in this area, and he would insist that forget about calling obesity a disease, that this is a behavioral issue purely and simply. That's what it is. Change your behavior, you solve the problem. I would suggest that it's really both. It's a two-sided coin there. What do you think, Amy?
We've touched on the genetics versus environment, yeah. And definitely the genetics can play a role, but the environment is crucially important because if you look at if you're overweight parents, then you're more likely to have overweight children, possibly because of the lifestyle, the exercise, the nutrition can also play a role. So it's important for everyone, normal weight, healthy weight, overweight, to make sure that you're getting the healthy food and exercise.
Doctor, I'm guessing you're right in line with that.
I'm right in line with that. But as far as the behavior thing goes, I mean, behavior is alterable. It depends on how much we want to take our responsibility for our own behavior. And so when somebody comes into the hospital I sit in right now with a heart attack, that's oftentimes a life-changing event. And oftentimes the person says, okay, I guess I had a heart attack. How can I not have another one? And that's behavior changing. And many of the things that we've talked about in this show so far, we recommend to people. Why do you want to wait until you're 53 and just had your heart attack when if you started earlier and you changed your behavior then, maybe you never have to see me after a heart attack?
Okay, it certainly makes sense to me. Let's try this email from Marie. Will the diagnosis of obesity as a disease allow people to apply for disability benefits? Do either of you have any sense as to whether or not that would happen? The silence is silence is deafening.
So I would say, this gets back into some of the tricky issues of this concept of obesity and a disease state, and that the public health concern from the standpoint of obesity is the impact it has on so many things. And heavier people, they break down their joints, they become less able to exercise, less able to be active, and they are the ones who potentially become more likely to be disabled from a society definition standpoint. I'm not sure that this is where I want to focus the attention, because, you know, these are people that are the ones that I said were challenging already. They've had the obesity, and we didn't have the opportunity to try to correct or make a change earlier on in the process. What I'm encouraging in the things that I say to everybody here is that we all have an opportunity to change the future of our life. And I would argue that if we're able to really take on this responsibility for ourselves, it potentially decreases the number of people that we have labeled as being disabled rather than increases it.
All right. That is Dr. Michael Lim, Slough Care cardiologist. I think I have time for another call or two. Guy calling from North St. Louis County, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a very good program, and I don't disagree with anything any of your panelists said. I think you made good points. But first, the doctor suggested that we all have an addiction to food, and that a good evening is based around a meal, which is true, but it's true worldwide across cultures and nations, and most of those cultures don't have an obesity issue. Foods cooked from scratch at home are much healthier. People buy advertised products. There's no ads on television for green beans, beef liver, or apricots, but there are for fast food, chips, etc. So packaged foods invariably are based on fat, sugar, or salt. Red dye number 6, yellow dye number 5, blue dye number 1, disodium phosphate, artificial flavor, those are not food groups. So eating natural food, I think, is really more the answer than anything else. And food deserts have a big part in this.
Right, Guy. You know, I think you've touched upon a number of points that we have already discussed. It certainly is true, Amy, that different cultures eat differently, and many of them are much healthier than we are, just for the points that he raised there.
Yes, and that's in our society. And we've seen in a generation of children, they have tripled their rate of overweight and obesity in one generation. We've also seen in our America that our portion size are 2 to 5 times bigger than they were. Our beverages give us 31% more calories than they used to. So there's a lot in our culture that is leading towards overeating and not exercising.
What would you think the impact of this reclassification by the AMA is going to do in the area of anorexia and bulimia? Do you see an impact here?
Especially in that adolescent population, it has to come with education. Because if you just tell a parent or, especially an adolescent girl or boy that they're obese and you don't provide education on how do you eat healthy, they could, and even the parents could harm that adolescent, especially if they're in their growth spurt. They need to know you can't just eat too few calories when you're in your growth spurt. You still need calories. So there's specific medical guidelines on how much weight you should lose depending on how overweight you are. So definitely think that the medical profession is needed to help families, especially in those critical years of childhood and adolescence.
Dr. Lim, would you have any concerns in this area?
I'll echo what Amy just said. I think, the idea isn't to focus on somebody's overall weight, but to make sure that we're eating appropriately. We teach our young people what a good balanced diet is, and we teach them that diet concept that can last for a long time, which goes back to what the caller was saying. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of cultures around that have it figured out way better than our culture does. That's where some of the concepts of a diet like the Mediterranean diet come into play, where the Mediterranean diet is thought to be a lot more healthier, especially from a cardiovascular standpoint. The big piece of the Mediterranean diet is it has a lot less processed foods, as Amy is pushed on and is totally right about, and it has a lot smaller of portions than our current society is accepting.
We only have a minute left. I would think, and this is for each of you, that Big Pharma is licking its chops over this and a chance to develop more products, pharmaceutical products, to deal with weight loss. What do you think, Doctor?
So there's as you already alluded to, a tremendous amount of money into weight loss. And I think that the mistake there is into twofold. Number one is it's focused on an actual weight rather than, as we've pushed forward, a concept of a healthy body weight, which isn't necessarily in the overall number of pounds you weigh. And number two is it's a quick fix. It doesn't actually alter your behavior. It allows your behavior to continue to be X, which is not good, and substitutes for a change in behavior. And that's a surrogate, and I would suggest not as healthy and not the right way to go.
Can you respond in 15 seconds, Amy?
I would hope that the emphasis is on healthy diet choices and exercise and not the weight loss drugs and the supplements, but actually teaching people how to treat obesity and prevent obesity.
That takes us right back to square one. Amy, thank you so much. That's Amy Moore, professor at St. Louis University. Dr. Michael Lim, also with us, Slough Care cardiologist. Thank you both so much for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the issue of payday lending and a ProPublica investigation into efforts in Missouri to protect the payday lending industry. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.